Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. There is an incredible facility right here in downtown Toronto that is helping on the front lines and is doing incredible innovative research. They are a facility that treats everybody with dignity, and they need your help. May 6th to 12th is Mental Health Week. If this matters to you, help CAMH. There's no better place for your resources. Go to camh.ca/CanadaLand. And donate now. Help CAMH treat addiction and build hope. This episode of Canada Land Shortcuts is brought to you by HelloFresh, the meal kit service dedicated to making cooking fun, easy, and convenient. Each week, HelloFresh creates new delicious recipes with step-by-step instructions designed to take around 30 minutes for everyone from novices to seasoned home cooks short on time. For 50% off of your first box, visit HelloFresh.ca/CanadaLand and use the promo code CanadaLand when you subscribe. This episode is also brought to you by Second City. What better way to introduce confidence to young people than by providing them a safe space to be themselves at Second City Comedy Camps? There's an early registration discount available if you enroll by December 1st for winter Second City Comedy Camps for your kids. Visit secondcity.com/TC for more info and to register. Elamine Abdul-Mahmoud.
Hello.
Editor of News Curation for BuzzFeed.
That's me.
Welcome back.
Thanks, man.
Elamine, today we are going to talk about this awesome collaborative journalism project where Canada's two biggest newspaper chains got together, joined forces to kill 30 of each other's newspapers and then lie about it.
Teamwork makes the dream work.
We are going to talk about Viceland. It used to be a TV channel. And we are going to talk about how if Postmedia is going to go down, they are going to damn well go down denying climate change. Got to stand for something. Good to have you with me.
Thanks, man. Looking forward to it.
This episode of Canada Land Shortcuts is brought to you by Neil McKegney, Randolph Swire, Kelly Pratt, Banerjee, Greg Atkinson, Brian Cox, Emily Dyer, and Jack Lehman.
I'm Jack Lehman, worker-owner of Come As You Are Cooperative in Toronto, Canada. Canada Land manages to shine a light where others just don't, and you all make shit kind of funny, relevant, and interesting to boot, even if literally all of you are wrong about what's wrong with CBC Radio.
And this episode is brought to you by HelloFresh. Elamine, can I talk to you about boxes of food?
I think you're going to anyway.
I am. HelloFresh sends you a beautiful insulated box. It's weird because it's food, but it feels like you're unboxing some amazing like product from Apple. It's beautifully arranged, so the cold stuff is near the ice packs, and then the other stuff is kept away from the freezing, and then you've got just enough of each ingredient, and then you go and you cook, and you got what you need in 30 minutes to make a beautiful meal for your family, and they just send this to your house.
That sounds wonderful.
It is wonderful, and it stops you from all of the irritating parts of cooking, like standing there in the supermarket going up and down aisles, trying to figure out what to buy, buying things you don't need, buying too much of things. If this sounds good, if you have heard me or other podcasts or friends talking about meal kit services, HelloFresh is the meal kit service you should give this a shot with. And you got no reason not to, because you get 50% off of your first box when you visit HelloFresh.ca/CanadaLand and use the promo code CanadaLand when you subscribe. So I think it took a moment for us to realize just how shitty the news was this week for Canadian newspapers. I think part of that is because the way that Toronto Star's newspapers, the Metro newspapers, headline this,
Torstar and Post Media announced 41 newspaper deal.
Yep.
That sounds like that could be great.
That has like the star emoji beside it. You know what I mean? Like just like it's just like a glittery headline.
Yeah. 41 newspaper deal. Deal wheeling and dealing in the newspaper business. 41 newspapers.
I'm excited.
That could be good.
And then you read it.
Not good. And at least at Post Media, we'll say a lot of things about Post Media today, but at least they were honest in their headline. Newspaper swap will see titles close their doors. Essentially, Elamine, what they did was they looked at all these markets where Torstar has one community paper and Post Media has a community paper, and they're both struggling, and they said, hey, let's not fight. You take Sarnia, we'll take Ottawa.
Right.
And they carved up Ontario.
Right.
And basically said, we will make more money, or at least we will lose money at a slower rate if we create a series of regional newspaper monopolies.
That's right. So, you know, in Barrie, for example, they had, what was it, the Advance and the Examiner, and then they shut down one, and then they're, you know, keeping the other one alive?
We'll talk in a minute about whether or not that makes sense, and it might make sense.
Yeah.
But I want to talk first, you know, we're going to talk about how this was presented in the media, and I think that just the sheer dishonesty with which this was communicated is worth a little bit of attention. Here is Paul Godfrey, the CEO of Post Media, Million Dollar Man, presenting this information on Business News Network.
We didn't know what they were going to do, and they didn't know what we were going to do. We basically wanted to consolidate our footprint, so we asked Torstar whether they were interested in doing this, but it was only today that I found out what they were doing, and they found out what we were doing.
I just found out today.
Surprise.
Yeah, look, I didn't know what was going to happen. I mean, I knew that I was going to kill all their newspapers as soon as I got them, but I didn't know that they were going to kill all of mine. I mean, it was, you know, look, I'll give you a paper in Barrie where you already got a paper. What do I know? Maybe you'll run both papers. The insult to the intelligence of the public there is, like, pretty remarkable.
It's incredibly cynical. You know, like, it just feels like an incredibly cynical kind of move to do this. And be like, I had no idea. We had no idea what the other side was going to do.
And obviously what's happening here is that we purposely did not ask, like, it's not written in the deal, because if it was written in the deal that we're making a deal to kill over 30 newspapers, we would have antitrust issues with the Competition Bureau. And when they announced this, Post Media in their news release said, this transaction is not subject to the merger notification provisions of the Competition Act, and no regulatory clearance is required to close this transaction. So yeah, that's interesting. And they had this whole case all laid out. Like, this is we value this deal. Like, they could put any imaginary number they want on it because it was a no-cash deal. It's just a trade of newspapers. Under $88 million, we don't need Competition Bureau permission for this. It's not a Competition Bureau thing. So we called up the Competition Bureau. Robert Hiltz, reporting for Canada Land, called up the Competition Bureau. And they said, well, yeah, if they're going to say it's under $88 million, they don't need pre-approval. But we're definitely investigating this. Like, you're not supposed to. Like, that is monopoly tactics.
Right.
And really, it's not that they're saying that we don't need regulatory clearance or approval. Like, maybe they don't need pre-clearance. It's not that this isn't an antitrust issue. It's that they know that the Competition Bureau is toothless and has rolled over every time in the past when it comes to media consolidation in Canada, which has just been disastrous. The Competition Bureau has provided no obstacle ultimately. And they're saying, we'll get away with it.
Have we seen something of this scale, though? Like, there's no newspaper advertisement in Eastern Canada that isn't Post Media at this point. Like, is that, can the Competition Bureau not look into this?
We're going to do a whole Canada Land on this. We're going to talk to somebody who focuses on media consolidation, because there's a long history of this that goes, I mean, Godfrey in that same interview brings up Post Media acquired Sun, and everyone said, well, you're obviously just doing this to kill competition. No. We think that this is, we can keep both papers going. We'll own two papers in one market. It'll be great. And then they just very quickly, the two papers were just branded differently and with the exact same content. And then they started killing newspapers, exactly. What people feared.
And that took like 8 or 9 months. Like, it didn't even take a year.
Oh my God. And then, you know, there's a history that goes back beyond that. John Tory's dad, John A. Tory, was under investigation for antitrust stuff when the Southam and Thompson newspaper chains were up to the same business, and the Competition Bureau rolled over there too ultimately. Why does Golden Tree Assets, this vulture fund, you're not supposed to have a U.S. company owning Canadian newspaper chains, and Godfrey finagled this crazy deal. This is why this is all happening. I mean, this is the thing, is that once we get past the optics of this, which are just terrible, you could say, look, they're doing what they got to do to survive. That might be true of Torstar, but Post Media is doing what they got to do to make these massive interest payments on their, like, mobster loan that they got.
I think that was letting Torstar off the hook a little bit easy, them doing what they got to do. I mean, like, Kieran DeLamont had a good tweet about this, about how this is essentially just handing over 290 jobs to be fired by someone else.
Yeah.
And that's really what it feels like.
Well, yeah, 290 people have lost their jobs, 46 at Torstar, 244 at Post Media, though it's hard to track because it's like, I'll fire your guys, you fire my guys.
Correct.
Post Media, at least from the, like, Godfrey was claiming he had no idea what was going to happen. At least Post Media's official messaging on this, their spokesperson said, this transaction helps to preserve jobs in areas that simply cannot sustain multiple products any longer. At least they're saying, okay, like these markets can't have multiple newspapers. They're being honest about the fact that, like, yeah, this was a deal to stop competition. You know, maybe these communities can only sustain one newspaper. That might just be a hard fact that we all have to swallow.
Right.
But the way that this was handled for the people laid off is with predictable, ham-fisted, inhumane people learning about this from press releases from their own newspapers or from other people's newspapers.
Oh my God, in Kingston, the Kingston Heritage and the Frontenac Gazette, two weeklies, people just showed up to work on Monday and the doors were locked. They just couldn't get into the place where they had been working.
This is sad shit, man. Here's a tweet from Jordan Heath Rawlings, a journalist who said, I'm about to quote a sentence from one of these releases that sums up the reality of daily newspaper journalism so perfectly it nearly leaves me in tears. And here's the quote. Torstar will also close the free dailies 24 Hours Toronto and 24 Hours Vancouver, a move that will result in the loss of one job.
Wow. Yeah, that's heavy.
And that's why journalists are really sad about this. I don't think the public's so sad. We stopped caring about a lot of these newspapers. A lot of these community newspapers have been so gutted of what makes a community news. What makes you care about a community newspaper? If there's like actual diligent coverage of your local community and local government, or if there's like a local, you know, columnist that you really like, or they're actually paying attention, you know, and it's just been replaced with wire copy, aggregated stories. In the case of the Metro papers, just Torstar aggregated content, ads, ads, ads. Like, what are people supposed to care when these papers disappear? You know, that's harsh. There are still people there who just lost their jobs who are saying, excuse me, I was in that paper. And they were fighting the good fight against management that was just squeezing the product to the point where its death matters as little as it ever has to the readerships. Say that.
That's brutal. I think that's a brutal way of putting it.
When you publish less of a paper than you ever have before, and you publish less original local content than you ever have before, then the community engagement is lower than it ever has. So, I mean, I'm of two minds about this. Like, I feel like it's bad to lose journalism in your community, but there is an unfed market demand that I don't think it's going to continue to be hard for upstarts to launch successful products in these markets as long as these companies that don't give a damn about these communities are still operating at all.
But I mean, so here's the thing, is that the quality of the product is certainly a large part of the discussion. But the other part of the discussion here is, what do these companies do to sort of introduce a new business model in the last decade, say, of adjusting to digital advertising to cater to marketing within those local communities so that those papers can be a part of that conversation? The answer is nothing, right? The answer is absolutely nothing. Why are you smiling?
Ellerman, they just didn't have enough time. They didn't have enough time. Listen to what Paul Godfrey later said.
I think if we had a five-year runway where we could develop some digital transformation into the digital world so we could compete with Google and Facebook, then there is some hope.
Ellerman, Paul Godfrey, who's only 93 years old. I don't know. He's 108 years old. He had a plan. All he needed was five more years of runway, which the government was supposed to give him. Instead, they slammed the door. He slammed the door on poor Paul Godfrey's face.
Paul Godfrey, sometimes, listen, I don't want to be mean about Paul Godfrey, but I'm going to be. But sometimes he just sounds like a cartoon villain who at the end is like foiled again by the digital advertising. And it just sounds so absurd. Like that quote, it's quite laughable. You had so much time and so much runway to offer a digital product that could keep up with the demand for advertising on Facebook, on Google, that newspapers could be a part of, but they just have not developed such a product.
That is simply not true. National Post has invested. They had the four platform plan. They had a brilliant guy named Chris Tyndall doing this thing called Post Media Labs. They were doing all kinds of innovation, skunkworks, research into digital. And wait, oh wait, they closed the Post Media Labs. Where's Chris Tyndall? Oh, he's working with you at BuzzFeed.
I didn't want to mention that.
Right, he's at BuzzFeed. This is the big lie of the Post. Like, I'm not kicking a company that's just like struggling to stay alive. The cynical play, Post Media, can't say it enough, is that they stopped trying to really transition and basically entered into a relationship where they are going to slowly wind down the business and sell it off for parts. And Paul Godfrey's job is to lie about that.
Yes.
His job is to present this as like, look, I'm doing my best here. I'm trying to do it. Like, and then defend his salary, like why he's worth $1 million. And he kind of said it to CTV the same day of interviews about this. They said, so isn't it kind of shitty that you're getting this like $1 million salary while you're laying off all these people? And he said,
I'm an experienced executive. There are very few in the newspaper business.
But then he said, if they got rid of me, who else are they going to get?
Who do you think is going to come to an industry that's having trouble to survive?
Right? To come to this shitty, dying business.
To manage this tire fire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the point is not that they would need an innovative steward who can actually make the transition. This is a shit job of being the public fit. Like you have to misrepresent this while you sell off real estate, lay off jobs, squeeze whatever revenue you can out of what's still making any money at all. But this is, okay.
But here's the thing, yeah. Is that there's a philosophical nugget at heart here, which is that at the end of the day, we're expecting companies whose allegiances are to the shareholders to be beholden to local news markets. And I think there's an error in that thinking. There's an error in that thinking that they'll ever choose the right thing over the shareholders, mostly because I have a legal duty to the shareholders. And so at the end of the day, it's like, how are we going to make money? The only way to make money is to do this shitty thing. They will always choose the shareholders over
defending civic responsibility. Good local journalism. Agree with you,
yeah.
But you know, in a perfect world, the interest of the shareholders in making money and the interest of the newspapers in staying alive and having a viable business would be compatible. In the case of Post Media, the way they have structured their business, it is no longer compatible. In the case of Torstar, this is a company that if they stop paying dividends to their shareholders above a certain level for a certain amount of time, then non-voting shares become voting shares. And this publicly traded company is no longer going to be controlled by this family. And instead, people are going to say like, look, maybe this isn't a business that can make the crazy profits that you enjoyed for decade after decade. Is there still a business to be salvaged here? And let's throw aside the civic responsibility. Let's just say we just want to make money. Let's just say that that's what they're after. If that's what they were after, they would be behaving differently. You know what I mean? Like I still don't know what their strategy is. We're going to park this for now because I want to talk to somebody. Like what I'm embarrassed to say is that for all the conversations about journalism I've had on the show, I've had like very little, maybe once, talk to somebody on the business end of newspapers. I want to get some clarity and educate myself. Is it still possible to run a much smaller but profitable business? Is it even conceivable? I want to talk to somebody who's seen this from the executive side of things, or at least from an academic research. We're chasing guests now, and I want to have that conversation. So that's what people can expect next.
Consider it parked.
This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. We got a tour of their facilities in their downtown Toronto campus, and I was blown away by the heroic work that these people are doing. They are saving lives every day. I know people whose lives were saved, and they just really care about the dignity of the people who turn to them for help. Look, we talk a lot about these issues on Canada Land. We talk about the crisis that is claiming 20 lives every day in Canada to drug overdoses, but we don't give you a lot of options of what you can do about it. CAMH is an option. CAMH desperately needs resources that they directly put into their work, saving lives and turning people's lives around. Listen, May 6th to 12th is Mental Health Week. This is when they need your help the most. Go to camh.ca/CanadaLand to help CAMH treat addiction and build hope. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp, therapy online that has served over 3 million people around the world, and it's available here in Canada. And this time of year, we're all emerging from our winter like seclusion and, you know, patio season and socializing, and it can be terrifically fun, but it can also create a lot of pressure. And some people get like anxiety, social anxiety from being out too much. What did Iggy Pop say about social life? It's torture dressed as fun. It doesn't need to be torture. I think it's just about finding like the right balance of how much of other people do you want? I mean, we need each other, but I think that at a certain point, it can become overwhelming. And talking to somebody about yourself, about your social life, about your relationships is a way of gaining insight into what is right for you. It's not selfish to examine that with a professional. And as the largest online therapy provider in the world, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Listeners of the show get 10% off of their first month at betterhelp.com/CanadaLand. That's better, H-E-L-P, betterhelp.com/CanadaLand.
Elevin, I want to encourage you to note duly that which must be duly noted.
Let's do it.
Will you go first?
I would love to. I got two. Can we do two?
Yeah, let's do two each.
Amazing. Okay, the first one, I want to duly note a tweet. I can do that if I want to.
You can do whatever you want and duly note it.
Thank you. Stop saying duly noted. I want to duly note a tweet from Vicky Muchama. She quote retweeted you because you had a tweet where you were like, you know, somebody should be looking into all these sexual harassment allegations in Canadian media. And her tweet was like, well, isn't that your job? And listen, you're making a face. And before we get to your face, let me just finish my point. My point is that for better or for worse, you've come to play this role in Canadian media. And so people are kind of curious when they see that tweet coming from you, be like, Jesse, I thought that was a thing that you were doing.
Yeah.
And so where are you at? Where are we at with this?
Right. My face was just, the inflection was wrong. I mean, I don't want to, you know, make presumptions about Vicky's inflection, but I think her tweet was, isn't that supposed to be your job? Like you just, isn't
yeah, that? Yeah, I didn't, absolutely. That is a correct inflection.
Yeah, I've talked a bit about that tweet on the show and how it could have been worded differently, but absolutely, the point that I was making, I think, is still a good one, is that the Weinstein effect, whereby the social media Me Too campaign actually results in the media, the news media, launching investigations into guys who are accused of sexual misconduct, and going from sometimes anonymous Me Too information or information that wasn't public on social media to, we've looked into this. We verified the details of this claim. We went and found out if other people have allegations about this guy. And what we can tell you is that these are credible allegations and there are this many of them. And it went on from this period of time to this period of time. And then let's go to the person and get their side of it. And they either say, I'm terribly sorry, I'm going to sex rehab, or I deny it and they're all lying, whatever. And we've seen, you know, I have to tell everybody, we've seen this happen again and again and again, but not in the Canadian news media, with the exception of Quebec. So to Vicky's point, well, aren't you the guy who did the Gomeshi investigation? Shouldn't this be you? Yes and no. Is that my job? No. The job is emerging in news media. This is actually a beat that like Jody Cantor has in the New York Times.
Right.
Like that was my big question after Gomeshi. Like, oh, it's a watershed moment. Like, okay, so are we going to do this from now on? Are we going to take these claims seriously and report them? And we didn't. There were cases, but like the papers did not get serious. And usually it would come from the accusers, not from newspapers launching proactive investigations. So there's all this mitigating language that was missing from my tweet, but I haven't seen it happen here.
But I mean, like in the wake of the Weinstein story, have you done any of that kind of reporting?
Yeah.
Because yes and no.
Yes.
Right? Okay.
Yeah. We have a list of accusations. We have a list of guys. And
so what is your job?
As an organization, it is part of Canada Land's job. If it falls in media, then it is part of our job to investigate these claims. So,
right.
And we're doing that. So I think that's absolutely fair and on to hold that mirror up to us and say, what about you guys? And I think I feel like I can still ask that question of the media at large, saying, why aren't you doing what all these American newspapers are doing? All of these organizations that dwarf us in their resources, where are your investigations? And in fact, in certain cases, I know that like us, they are pursuing investigations and they haven't published yet. We haven't published yet either. This is the kind of stuff you want to get right. You are damaging people's reputations when you print these allegations. So you better damn well make sure that they're credible. But I know because the Toronto Star dropped the Gomeshi investigation, and I know other investigations that were dropped by Canada's newspapers, that there's not just a question of readiness. There's also a question of, it doesn't seem like we have the same will and bravery with it. But people can stay tuned and they should watch our coverage because we are taking this stuff seriously and we are working on a number of stories.
Fair.
Duly noted.
Now you.
All right. I have more horrible media news.
Okay.
More cynical, horrible media news, because in the midst of this Torstar Post Media news, the Globe and Mail dropped a little, you know, just slipped this into the news cycle. They're killing their Globe BC section.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's a BC-specific section.
Yeah. If you buy the Globe and Mail in British Columbia, it has a section dedicated to your province. No longer. And they announced it also in a very disingenuous way. Oh, we're sort of folding that coverage into our A section, which is also now where the arts stuff is going to. We broke the story that they were killing their arts section. That's now in effect. It's a two-section newspaper from now on. They're claiming that this is like just a formatting decision. It's going to have, you know, no real effect on the amount of journalism, the amount of coverage that we have of things like arts or British Columbia. I think that that will bear out to be false. And I think that this is going to be a net loss of coverage for British Columbia. Speaking of the Globe and Mail, Christine Dobie had a scoop confirming what I suspected was coming for a long time and what Vice had been denying for a long time, which is that Viceland is in real serious trouble. The TV station that Rogers funded with, I don't know, $100 million deal, I think $50 million of that was cash from Rogers. Rogers will not be re-upping. They will not be supporting Viceland. Rogers owns 70% of that station. So unless Vice buys it back from Rogers, as Greg O'Brien was tweeting, it's done. We've been trying to get our hands on like accurate ratings. Like, I don't know anyone who watches. Like, you're marketing a TV station to people who don't have TV anymore. So to me, it always felt like a way of just making web video content with Rogers money and feeding their American TV stuff with Rogers money. And just squeezing it until that ran dry.
To me, Viceland was always an argument, right? Like it was an argument from Vice to say, we are an all assault unit. We can do air, we can do ground, we can do water. You know, we can do TV and we can do online. We can do whatever format you want in terms of advertising. And so if this is in fact true, and we might lose Viceland, that's a crucial part of Vice's argument that they're just this massive empire.
To me, Viceland was just the most recent installment in the history of Vice as a hipster Ponzi scheme. That's what it is, man. From the start, it's been every now and then some dummy millionaire will hand these people bags of money and say, this is what I want you to do. Lewinsky came to them and said, I want you, you're going to start a clothing, retail clothing. Like, sure, we'll take your money and we'll start a Vice chain of clothing stores. We'll do that and we'll keep some of that money and we'll make your stores. And then that fails. And then they basically went bankrupt and then they pulled it out again. And they've been going from wealthy benefactor to wealthy benefactor and saying, oh, we'll spend your money on whatever your TV, really? There's no way that if they were playing with their own money, Vice would ever have invested in a linear cable television station. It's just Rogers, like, we need to somehow try to salvage our linear cable TV, so we'll make a deal with Vice, and Vice was happy to spend their money.
But you can see how, at least in principle, the idea was good, right? In principle, taking the like hipness and like the weird popularity of Vice, like people who love Vice like love it a lot.
This idea that the kids love their Vice, I don't know, man. I don't know.
I mean,
every now and then some content will go
this
viral.
This is totally anecdotal.
Yeah,
totally anecdotal. But like the Vice fanboy friends of mine, and they tend to be men.
Yeah.
They send me a lot of Vice content.
All right.
Because they're like, we're super, super jazzed about this new Vice thing.
Can't argue with that. Yeah.
Yeah. Duly noted. Nope. Sorry. You're not done yet.
I had three more things, but I can be done.
Duly noted.
What is your second duly noted?
I want to duly note a long, long, long piece. Yeah, I got time. I can read. What of it? Long piece in The Guardian. I think it was about a week ago. It's a really good deep dive into neoliberalism at a moment where neoliberalism seems to be like everyone's favorite boogeyman, you know, like countries are going under because neoliberalism, factories shutting down because neoliberalism.
Damn right.
Well, anyway, it's a great deep dive into not only what the fuck neoliberalism is as an economic concept, but also the way it's come to be used as like a political tool flung from usually people from the left as an accusation is a bad thing, and then sort of tracing the history of it to how it became this way. It's a really wonderful piece.
What's it called and who wrote it?
It's called The Fatal Flaw of Neoliberalism, It's Bad Economics. And it's by Danny Roderick.
Duly noted.
You got another one.
I do.
Oh, yeah. Let's do it.
And like you, I too read long articles and am smart.
You have to brag about it. God.
I want to just alert people to a piece of journalism that should be getting more attention, which is a story in Maclean's by Ann Kingston about revelations that the health ministry under former health minister Jane Philpott was actually like doing some kind of secret conspiring with the private blood plasma industry to bring in blood plasma clinics for pay in Canada. And she'd made claims that suggested that she had not, didn't even know their business strategies. This is like a long story. And actually Commons covered this. And what this involves is it goes back to the tainted blood scandal, where paying people for blood resulted in people contracting HIV, and it resulted in recommendations that we should not be doing this. We should be running this as part of our public health system. And because of our public health system, Canadian blood plasma is really, really highly valued, right? Because we run a system where we're not trying to pay $25 to people who are in desperate situations.
Right.
We are known internationally for having a very clean blood supply. And so that creates a market opportunity for these private clinics to move in and try to push against these government recommendations. And what Ann Kingston reveals in this Maclean story is that the government has actually been working with these private clinics to kind of subvert the public system and introduce these clinics throughout Canada. It's pretty shocking.
That's fascinating. That's really high stakes.
It is high stakes stuff, and it's something people should read, and it's in Maclean's.
Duly noted.
Elamine, we're going to take a moment to thank a couple of sponsors here. It is the gift-giving season.
Yes, it is.
Is it not?
Yes.
You can't deny that.
What did you get me?
I'm going to give you some advice. I'm actually going to give you something. I'm going to give you a piece of information that is going to be worth $20 to you and to everyone listening if they use the app Giftagram.
What a man.
Yeah.
What a gift.
Giftagram is the Canadian company that makes it easy to be thoughtful. You download this app onto your mobile device, and they've curated a bunch of gifts at every price point for anybody like you might want to buy a gift for. Just that, like you're going through things that you're probably going to want to give to somebody, and you're going to have to buy gifts anyhow. So here you are, rather than going through a mall and spending a day, it's just like, oh, I just went through 30 gifts at the under $50 level, and boom, that's the one that's going to suit this person. And then you just enter in their email address and you're done. They get a notification. Jesse's just bought you this wonderful gift. They enter in the shipping address, because you don't know, maybe they want to get it at work.
That sounds super helpful.
It's very helpful. The gift arrives in 3 to 5 days. I did this, the gift arrived the next day. And here's the part that is my gift to you, Elamine. You are going to get $20 off your first gift purchase. If you go to the Apple App Store or Google Play, download Giftagram and use the promo code CanadaLand when you use Giftagram.
Going to do that today. Thanks, man.
And this episode is brought to you, Elamine, by Second City. What better way to introduce confidence to young people, Elamine, than by providing them a safe space to be themselves? That is what the Second City Comedy Camps offer over the winter break. This is an issue parents have. The kids are at home. Like, this is a really interesting thing you can do. You can send your kid to comedy camp over the winter break. These are welcoming and inclusive comedy camps. If you've got a shy kid and you want them to come out of their shell, if you've got a performative kid and you want to channel that, then this is the place. Kids in grades 2 through 12 are welcome at comedy camp. It requires zero experience. Great way to make new friends and learn to laugh at themselves. Improv allows people to fail without judgment, without embarrassment. These winter camps run from December 27th to the 29th, and then again from January 2nd to January 5th. And it's a full-day thing from 9 to 5 each day that your kids are in there. Elamine, you will get a discount on early registration if you enroll by December 1st. Visit secondcity.com/TC for more info and to register. Elamine, it's important for us to remain informed about climate change, the most pressing issue perhaps of our age. And so I try to read everything I can, which is why I read Joe Oliver.
Why?
The former finance minister.
And minister of natural
and
resources.
Minister of natural resources.
Might know a thing or two about climate change.
You know, when he speaks, I listen. And he wrote a piece in the Financial Post. Did you happen to catch that article?
I did, with great interest and delight and excitement.
What did you think of this piece? Just get right in there.
I would say that it was the old man yells at clouds of climate change pieces. Here's how I would describe it. A man desperate to overthrow the orthodoxy. A man who's ready to challenge the common understanding. A man who's out on a mission, really, to introduce really bad thoughts into the public.
The headline was, "Ranting about climate change isn't good government policy and isn't convincing anyone." First of all, it is an almost incomprehensibly written piece of writing.
It's also definitely a rant. So for a piece that has ranting is a bad thing in the headline, it is most definitely a rant.
It is, and it's obviously, like, it's just like, this is coming from a very specific political place, a throwback to Harper era. Policymakers should just be supporting Canadian fossil fuel industry at any cost, and whatever messaging gets you there. But the messaging changes, because the messaging used to just be completely like climate change denial, then it became skepticism, and now it's morphed into this bizarre rhetoric. Like, I don't even know like how to summarize this piece. I'll read the ending here. "Against all odds, climate change believers might adopt an approach that better reflects the needs of Canadians in the economic and scientific knowns and unknowns. Unfortunately, we are probably condemned to a dialogue of the deaf until we definitively confront environmental tragedy, or don't."
Thanks, Joe.
I'm going to try to summarize the points that he makes. Like, I'm not going to quote the whole damn thing, but
It's very long.
I tried to condense it. And here's my summary of the points. The public doesn't care because the rhetoric is too extreme. So we need to tone down the rhetoric so that the public will care. But maybe the public shouldn't care because polar bears are basically okay and the warming has stopped and all those crazy weather events, they're not any more frequent than they used to be. That's not really a thing anymore. And the climate change models are all either exaggerated or just plain wrong. That's a direct quote. But okay, maybe, Joe Oliver says, maybe man-made change is happening. I'll concede that. It's happening, but we don't know how badly it's happening. That's where the science is at, says Joe Oliver. And anyhow, maybe it's a good thing. Maybe it's a good thing because plants find greenhouse gases to be delicious.
Oh, that's right.
He praises the benefits of greenhouse gases. So if you think about it that way, we don't really know how much man-made changes, you know, greenhouse gases have an upside. So maybe the stakes are actually pretty low, except the stakes are so high, he writes. So we need to get this right and do the right thing, by which I mean we shouldn't do anything, writes Joe Oliver. Because even if we did things, we here in Canada with our policies couldn't make that much of carbon, you know, cap and trade. We couldn't make that much of a difference anyhow. So like doing the right thing means not doing much, except that would make a huge difference because it would cost Canada a fortune. So we shouldn't do that. We shouldn't do anything. And anyhow, we're doomed to have a terrible debate about this until we solve it for good or don't.
That was a really great summary, actually.
I think I've nutshelled it.
I'm impressed. I'm impressed that you sort of captured every bad thought in that piece. I found it interesting that Joe Oliver is picking up on these, like, you know, caricature ideas of what climate change is. You know, like, at a certain point, of course, he's got to mention that the polar bears are fine. Like, that's not what we're talking about, Joe. That's not what anyone is talking about when it comes to climate change at this particular moment. What we're talking about is, like, okay, maybe Joe Oliver will luck out and listen to this. And, like, I know so little about climate change because there's so much research out there that you could spend the rest of your life reading it. But here's what I do know. I do know that, for example, if there are more rainstorms in a year, Toronto might have 3 or 4 more rainstorm days a year. And like, that's not that bad to you and I because we live in downtown Toronto. But what if you lived in a poor neighborhood that had poor sewer systems, and therefore causes flooding, and therefore diseases go up in that poor neighborhood? That is something that is happening in Atlanta that was reported in Gizmodo like a month ago. Mm-hmm. We do know that in about 100 years, if the temperatures on Earth go up just 2 degrees, then we'll have more extreme weather events. Those tend to affect poorer countries more often than they do in Canada. So yeah, for sure, you might not feel it, Joe. But I think there are real people in the world that do feel it. And we know for sure that climate change is something that disproportionately affects. Why am I arguing with Joe Oliver?
Dude,
he's not even in the room.
Stop. It's like
I'm getting mad.
What is truth? Like, at what point do we just say it's happening on any level you like. It's on the anecdotal level, on the like, holy shit, I'm wearing a t-shirt and it's December level. It's happening in the like every month there is some insane weather event in the world, like the frequency of that. Like, and then it's like, oh yeah, but that's just anecdotal. What is this? The science confirms it as well. I think keeping the public in a permanent state of befuddlement and baffled, and he's right in one sense, which is just that like, the rhetoric being so high and the action being so low, people just ultimately throw up their hands like, I know about jobs or I care about this, but what do you want me to do? And nobody has any clear direction about it. And I think that this type of irresponsible publishing, this type of irresponsible opinion, it's just tactics. It's just tactics to just throw a lot of bullshit into the mix and just keep this a confusing topic that people walk away from.
But you know what? He does raise the point that we should grapple with, which is that the concern about climate change is going down. That's something that he brings up in the piece. And I wonder to what extent is that like a failure on our part, on the media's part, to effectively communicate the stakes to people, to be like, oh my God, you really should care. Because, yeah, there's a lot of alarmist for good reason. I say alarmist.
Alarming.
Yeah, I was going to say alarmist borrowing his language, but like really like it's very alarming events that are happening. And so what have we failed to do as an estate, as a pillar of society, the media, in order to communicate effectively that the people should be concerned?
It's really broken. Truth is broken. Like I am skeptical of his numbers. Like really the public concern in global warming is going down.
There were American numbers that sort of corresponded with it, so I'm not especially surprised.
I guess. I mean, it feels like this has moved from something that people on the environmentalist left cared about to something that is like widely and popularly understood to be like, oh yeah, weather is fucked now. Like everybody gets that now, I think. But, you know, there's maybe a disconnect between knowing that and feeling like, you know, like, but how engaged are you with this? How much do you care about this? Or to what extent do Canadians secretly kind of dig it because it's warmer here?
I mean, that's a thing that people say. Like, that's a thing that people are like, oh my God, it'll be nicer in December. And it's like, no, you fucking idiot. Some countries will drown. Like, we'll complete. Anyway.
Thank you, Joe Oliver. Thank you for this piece.
Thank you. Thank for you. My rage. Love having rage this morning.
Thank you, Elamine. That's your Canada Land Shortcuts.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Hope everybody enjoyed it. You can email me about it at jesse@canadalandshow.com. I read everything you send me. And we're on Twitter at CanadaLand. Elamine, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Elamine88. That's Elamine88. Follow me. Let's hang out.
You can subscribe to our other shows, our politics show Commons. We're searching for a new host, and you can follow that journey. And The Imposter is putting out some fantastic episodes. The most recent one about Aaliyah Bhavani performing her first 5-minute set of comedy in front of an audience. Spoiler alert, she's good. Check those out. And this episode is produced by Kevin Sexton. Syndication of Canada Land to community and campus radio stations across this country is handled by CFUV in Victoria, 101.9 FM. Visit them online at cfuv.ca. Our crowdfunding site is patreon.com/CanadaLand. Our website is canadalandshow.com. Maybe like us on Facebook. If you like what we do, please support us.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.